Hello again.
Have a seat.
Thanks for meeting with us. It's a nice restaurant. The band sounds good.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. What can I get you to drink?
Yes, I'll have an old Bandersnatch bourbon.
For lunch?
Why not? There's no clock to be on.
That's a good point. I'll have one, too.
Make that three.
Very good. I'll be right back with those.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time to meet. I mentioned before that I'm looking for people who understand business and can provide context for the AI. I made a few calls, and if you're interested, I'd like to invite you to join us at New Providence. You would start out as independent contractors, and if everything works out, we could transition you to full-time.
That's a very generous offer. And while I can't speak for Goldie...
Gilbert.
Right, Gilbert. While I can't speak for Gilbert, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to accept, at least not for a little while. I have to go back tonight and train my replacement for the next 3 weeks. Otherwise, I don't get any severance. It's not much, but it's necessary.
Do you mind if I take a look at the severance agreement?
It's confidential, and I
understand. Tell you what, I'll write a number on a napkin, and you tell me if that would cover the severance.
Yes, that would cover it.
Call it a signing bonus.
So, Gilbert, what do you think?
I think this could be the start of a new partnership. Stern and Kranz.
Or the other way around.
What are you going to do about the flight home and training your replacement?
The only reason for signing the severance agreement and all that was the pay. And if that's covered, then I need to write a letter of my own.
Do we need for the drinks to get here before you start?
Great idea, but no. Here, let me get my laptop out. Okay, new letter. Right. Dear Mr. Hamnet Prince.
That's your boss?
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Yeah. I have considered the severance offer as well as the opportunity to train my replacement, and I have decided to forego both. Thank you for 25 wonderful years at working at Consolidated International, and...
You really mean that?
Yeah, I do.
But I thought you were there longer than that.
I was. 25 wonderful years, and 3 less not-so-wonderful years.
Got it.
Thank you for 25 years at Consolidated International, and I have decided to pursue other opportunities effective immediately. Best of luck in your future endeavors. Signed, Roman Kranz. I guess that says it. Okay, and sent.
Your phone is buzzing.
Yeah, I know. It's my boss.
Here, let me answer it.
Be my guest.
Good afternoon. Roman Kranz's phone.
Hello, is Roman there, please?
No, I'm sorry. Roman Kranz is no longer available. I'm his associate. Is there something I can help you with?
Yes. I wouldn't call unless it was a real emergency. We're having problems with one of our key regulatory reports. The numbers aren't matching up, and we need someone with his specific experience to troubleshoot. We need him dialed in and online immediately.
You must not have seen the email he just sent.
I saw it, and I understand that the timing couldn't be worse, but this is an emergency. We need our Red Adair. You know who Red Adair is?
Yes, I do.
I was just hoping that there was some loyalty left, and he could just help us out a little.
Unceremoniously cut loose after more than 25 years, and you're talking about loyalty?
Look, please, could you just ask him?
Okay. He was just here a minute ago. Hold, please, and I'll try to find him. Well...
Seriously?
That's what I thought. Hello? I just spoke with Roman, and while he appreciates your most generous offer, he must respectfully decline. Thank you for your interest. Goodbye.
Wait, they're going to fire me if this doesn't get fixed.
Well, then maybe we'll see you here at the AI Bootstrap next time. Goodbye. He's calling back.
Here, give it to me. Let's see. And blocked.
All right, it's all set. I just emailed the documents. You should have them shortly.
Looks like Rosie Kranz and Goldie Stern are not dead.
Nope, We're just getting started. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. I'm glad that Rosie Krantz and Goldie Stern are getting a fresh start.
I am too, but it doesn't always work out that way.
No, it doesn't. Except when we're writing the story and can sprinkle in a little deus ex machina.
That helps. But it was really because they were there in person at the AI Bootstrap, sponsored by Outplaced. Without that, they don't meet each other and they don't meet Claude.
And not coincidentally, our guest today is Tony Shaw, CEO of Dataversity. We're going to talk with him about the importance of data education, and especially the conferences presented by Dataversity. You might even learn a few things about hosting a conference.
Like bananas?
Maybe.
AI?
Possibly.
Well, I look forward to it.
You know, Rosie and Goldie have experienced both the threats and the opportunities of AI. That's what I want to talk about first. To me about AI is, as usual, the anthropologic nature of the discussion. There seems to be four beliefs around the impact of AI on people. Belief A, workers are doomed. Mass numbers of jobs will be eliminated. American managers will continue their field day with headcount reductions, totally overlooking the damage done to their workforces. Belief B, AI will be the worker's best friend. It will enable workers to focus on creativity and eliminate the mundane aspect of their jobs. There are professions like mine where AI has become a powerful tool. Belief C, my colleague Mark says AI is not about job loss. It's about workforce transformation. CIOs should transform workforces by restraining new hiring, retraining existing staff, and repositioning talent to new business areas to generate revenue. Mark and I part company here. I lean into belief D. Now, belief D is the issue that this is all bigger than human resource and training. There will be huge workforce shifts, and this is similar to the Industrial Revolution. In the Industrial Revolution, there were not enough bodies to retrain. They were all on the farm. They had to shift themselves to industry. In the 18th century, industrial working conditions were miserable, but believe it or not, they were far more tolerable than what folks dealt with back on the farm. I think we will see AI-related work demanding a similar epic worker shift. That means new social issues, which we don't know what they are yet, and new business models. Look, the 1950s brought all this fear of technology and automation. It's taken us an extra 70 years, but I think we're here. Well, we can talk all day, but shift happens. Best way to prepare and sleep at night is to consider the fifth belief. Belief E, all of the above. We're only at the beginning. The time to prepare is now. And for sure, be nice to each other. It is our esteemed pleasure to have as our guest today, Mr. Tony Shaw, who is CEO, President, Le Grand Fromage, everything you want to have with an organization called Dataversity. He has been the driver of training and education in the data world for a long time. We won't say how long. Tony, welcome to Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mark. Esteemed pleasure. I'm sitting here in a t-shirt on my sofa. I don't feel like esteemed is quite worthy, but
it's an esteemed sofa. I mean, you know, depending on where you bought it.
Wherever you are is esteemed.
That's all right.
Well,
So let's just get into it here. We're not going to ask some cliche question that AI has an impact, because we kind of sort of know that. But Tony, you had a front row seat to this industry. How's it going?
I could opine for hours. First of all, I guess, you know, I think sitting as a publisher and an event organizer, my goals for our audience are somewhat different from what happens day to day for data management practitioners in large organizations. Specifically, for example, you know, our goal is to watch the direction of things is, where the trends are heading. We try to identify things that people need to keep an eye on for the possibility that they will occur. I think, you know, most professionals day to day are much more concerned about pragmatic issues happening in their organization, how they're going to deal with, you know, one issue or another, or one person or another. You know, they're much more pragmatic day to day. You know, we're always looking at a wide range of possible outcomes, some of which don't happen, you know, many of which don't happen. So to answer your question about the conference business in particular, I mean, that has evolved so significantly in the past 10 years, not just from COVID, that was a huge impact, obviously, but the propensity of organizations to send their employees to physical events has, I think, been drastically impacted by the availability of information online and the willingness to accept remote instruction, remote education, and the widespread availability of free or very low cost education. So our adjustment to that is really to make the in-person experience as unique and special as we can. I mean, there are, I think most people would acknowledge that there are certain dynamics of meeting in person that just aren't available online. You know, wonderful it is to talk to you guys right now. I'd rather be sitting down over a beer or dinner. You know, and the conversation flows a lot differently in that environment than it does online. So we put a lot of effort into creating an experience where people can learn from each other in ways that only that in-person dynamic can provide. At the same time, you know, we've ramped up a lot of our online education in order to meet that demand as well. So in terms of the sort of relative balance of our business, it's much more equal now between online and in person, whereas pre-COVID it was much more weighted towards in-person meetings. I didn't attribute all of this to COVID, but you know, I do think that, look, we used to do 3 or 4 events a year.
Yeah.
And we'd have 600 people at every one, 1,000 people at EDW. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, 2,000 to 2,500 people attending our events. Yeah. This year we'll do one event and there'll be 500 people.
Yeah.
And that's everybody. I mean, there's only 350 of those who are actually paying.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the way in which that has changed is a reflection of the broader view of educational, you know, the value of in-person educational learning has declined, but or at least, you know, maybe individuals value it, but companies don't.
companies are becoming less. We went through a stretch in the 80s and 90s where it looked like companies were going to actually finally care about people. It was close, but no $8 banana.
Yeah. I know there's a conversation about whether AI is actually replacing jobs or not. I definitely think it is.
We talk about laying off and we get into that debate. And our two characters, Roman Krantz and Gilbert Stern, are enduring the existential crisis of getting laid off due to AI.
Yeah.
Although unlike the play, we do have a happy ending. So you should listen to this. When this episode drops in a couple of weeks, you should listen to it. How's the emergence of AI replacing or accelerating anything you're working on?
We've had to think really hard about what the role of AI can be, should be in the development of training materials and content. And we drew a line at creating content with AI, but we do use it for purposes that are related to proofing and editing, error checking, I guess, formatting, creating promotional messaging around courses. So we've been very diligent about using subject matter experts, continuing to use subject matter experts to create and vet content, but using AI, Gen AI in particular, to speed up a lot of the processes around that. So oftentimes it would take us, you know, it would take as long for back office functions to, you know, intake new material, proof it, format it, apply our branding, generate the marketing materials, etc. We've improved the speed of that process considerably, which is great. I mean, reduces time to market. AI, Gen AI, would be good to help identify some elements of structure, elements of topic coverage. You know, have we covered everything that this data stewardship course needs to be appropriate to a client in financial services? And oftentimes, you know, it'll be great for identifying a topic that maybe we've overlooked. But I don't think in the actual content creation process, we've seen a lot of productivity improvements as yet. Mm. As much as anything, because we spend more time sort of governing that content now, reviewing that content.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example too of how I use Gen AI in helping to refine the content for our conferences. If I plug in, okay, I'm doing a track on AI governance. What are the key topics we need to have covered this year? And what are the topics to look out for in the future? More often than not, I think it probably validates my existing thinking, but you know, to have it written down, and it often provokes me to look at some topics that maybe I wasn't on top of. So that can be really helpful.
I was involved in conference planning for many years, working with the Teradata Partners Conference. And I remember standing there in front of great, giant, huge boards with grids and sticky notes with the topics on it, and going from board to board and trying to figure out where to slot them and where did we have all of the topics covered, and we have two presentations by the same person at the same time. And having that type of AI resource really facilitates those types of activities.
And I'm in the midst at the moment, we're receiving speaking proposals for our conference in May, and I can give you a perfect example. So you know, I remain completely baffled by quantum computing. You know, I don't it doesn't make a lot of sense to me intuitively, so I don't consider myself well informed. However, I do feel like we need a session or two to prepare people for the oncoming trend. And, you know, whether quantum gets here in 2 years or 20 years, it will ultimately impact folks in data management in some context. So having Gen AI explain some of that to me and give me some context for looking at speaking proposals or going out and seeking speaking proposals, that is super helpful. The other area, though, that I really want to learn a lot more about is just process automation. We're not currently using AI internally for very much at all when it comes to process automation, and I need to get myself much more up to speed on that.
Definitely seem to be some opportunities on that front.
Yeah, and that's where we see a lot of customers using it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as far as using AI in a work, you know, in a professional environment, I think, especially as it relates to data governance, mm-hmm. automation would seem to me to be the big area of opportunity.
Definitely. So I want to drill into your answer a little bit about in-person conference. To me, one of the biggest benefits of the in-person conference is, of course, the in-person interaction. Right? Some of the best interactions happen accidentally, chatting with somebody during lunch or a break or waiting for a session to start, you know, just those serendipitous connections. And so with the in-person conferences becoming scarcer and scarcer, and personalized curriculums, I think leads to increasing isolation. Then how can we cultivate those connections?
The only way to make it really financially viable for organizers and particularly for participants, only way to make that financially viable at any sort of scale is to go local. You know, I think we run a national or actually international conference, you know, there are a lot of travel costs involved in that. The hotels and the airlines still make out, but, you know, it's the cost structure of those is high for us to run. It means we have to pass on a lot of expenses to our audience. And so it does make it difficult. And I understand that. We have chosen to do a lot of virtual communities of practice. We have study groups, for example, virtual study groups. We have COPs. We're going to be introducing some more of those in the new year. Yeah, take your point that it's not quite the same as being face to face, but you know, it's a very affordable and scalable alternative. We have a lot of events. Some, you know, some accompanied by cocktails, some not. We try to encourage discussion groups at lunch. We have mentor mentee sessions. We've always tried to encourage a lot of interaction during the conference sessions and the tutorials. You know, oftentimes you find the right person, they're sitting in the same room but the opposite side of the room, and they ask the question that you wanted to ask. And, you know, exactly. They become the person who you follow up with after the session. I think, you know, those sort of micro interactions become something bigger.
Absolutely.
If we can help to amplify those through our events, then, you know, I think that's part of our mission accomplished.
And you mentioned the costs. That was, you know, when I was helping with conference planning, to me, that was one of the biggest surprises when I started getting into it, just the different expenses and the cost and how much it costs to put on a conference. And so from your perspective, what would be a behind the scenes challenge in running this global data conference business that people would be surprised to hear about?
Well, okay. It costs us about $8 to serve you a banana.
That better be a good banana.
Yeah, and sometimes they just serve those little miniature ones. It is.
You know what I'm impressed with? I'm impressed with it. You know, it's $8 to serve a banana.
Oh my!
That's
goodness.
What I'm impressed with. That's some good cost management.
So the reason is so they'll charge about $6 for the banana itself. Then they charge 25% service charge, and then they'll charge, you know, whatever the prevailing sales tax is on top of that. So in California, it's about 10%. So, you know, you're looking at $8.50 almost. And it's the same for every, you know, a simple cup of coffee costs about $10. Just, you know, not a latte or anything. Just,
you know, okay.
Coffee out of an urn.
The cost accountant in me says just give everybody a Starbucks gift card and cut them over to the lobby. Right. That's it.
I wish it would. I wish it could be solved that way. You know, in order to get a contract at a hotel, you have to guarantee that your audience is going to fill X number of rooms.
Yeah.
For a big event like ours, that's generally around 2,000 rooms over the course of the week at, you know, 250 or so plus room tax. So, you know, that ends up being an obligation that's around 600,000 to 800,000 just in that promise to the hotel. You know, the model really requires that we have enough people attending the conference that they use the rooms. And in addition to that, though, there's a catering guarantee, which is generally, you know, well into six figures. And it costs around about, at this point, about $250 per day to feed people between breakfast, lunch, and two breaks. So
I'll just bring in Gordon Ramsay for $260.
Yeah. So that's part of where the economic challenge is in running an event, and why, you know, that's why we have to charge $3,000 for a ticket as opposed
that is surprising.
You know,
it makes a lot of sense when you get down into it.
Yeah. Audiovisual costs. We have a 6-track conference, and our audiovisual costs are generally around $70,000-$80,000. So
wow.
So, you know, you ask what's the surprising part. I think people do get shocked by how much. It's the one business I know where you pay more to buy in bulk. You pay a lot more to buy
more, the more bananas you buy, the more expensive they are. All righty. So yeah. I'd like to get back to the subject matter. You talked about using Gen AI for subject matter and seeing like what's out there. And then of course there's the call for paper / submit an abstract kind of thing. By the way, did you get all 17 of mine I sent in? Anyway,
only 16, I think. But yeah.
Oh no. So, there's that. Do you have any other input, say from leadership, other players in the industry, saying, Tony, we our people don't know anything about this stuff. You know, why don't we? You know, do you get any other inputs for that? To kind of round out your idea. I mean, determining what your content is a big deal. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, we get numerous inquiries about training every day. Sometimes it's just individuals who need to find the right course. Other times it'll be some, you know, business unit manager or training department who are looking to address a particular training need. Those conversations, I think, are among the most interesting. The requests range from large transformation projects. We're doing digital transformation. We want people to be more data-centric, to understand what it is to be data literate or data enabled, and that can be for an entire organization dealing with a proposal around that right now, which is really interesting because people have to talk through their problems or their needs when you get into something like that. So that's really informative. Then there are
detecting
other...
more needs? Are you detecting more needs lately, say, than historically? I mean, 20 years ago, we might have been focusing on how to build a data warehouse or how to do a data model. Are you getting, is there any hot, is it more leadership-based, business-based now? Or?
Well, it's always business-based. You know, I would say cultural transformation, you know, that's a wide ranging term, but you know, there's often an AI literacy or data literacy aspect to that. Yeah, I'd say culture is a big aspect of it. Oftentimes clients want to provide kind of a learning path for their employees, something that's almost like an internal certification process. You know, they want to bring people along from whatever their starting point is to higher levels of acumen and expertise in different areas. We see a lot of things, of course, around quality, governance, data architecture, strategy. We don't have quite the same level of really in-depth data science content that some others do. We don't do a lot of coding and developer training, so other providers I'm sure see more of that, but we often get these higher level questions around how do I make my entire organization more data driven. We're still struggling to get data governance off the ground. How do we do that, please? You know, and that'll generally be a smaller group, of course, but that, you know, have things evolved to the extent that, you know, now people ask about AI enablement, yes, but a very large number of organizations are still dealing with just getting data management off the ground in some way. There's still a lot of requests like that. Every time we run a conference, we ask, you know, how many people are here for the first time, and it's always at least half the audience who raise their hands. You know, they're just getting started in many cases. Or obviously there are new people coming in, and you kind of forget that many people who come into data management roles have not been formally trained prior to getting there. You know, there's still not a lot that happens at a university level. Many people find their way into data management from other business or IT functions.
Potential clientele right there.
Yeah, we're in conversations with a couple of universities at the moment about licensing some of our courses.
So I want to switch perspectives just a little bit to talk about, you know, you deal with vendors a lot, and I know there's always a balance between too much vendor orientation to make it seem like, you know, we're just fronting for a set of vendors, and then presenting these are the options that are available, these are folks that can help you with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. But from the vendor perspective, how are they reacting to AI? Are they rattled? Are they excited about it? Are they adjusting? Are there a lot of new folks that are entering the playing field, and then other folks are having, you know, they're not adjusting quickly enough and are falling off?
Well, I'd have to say probably without exception, the vendors are adopting AI. Are they rattled by it? They're certainly not admitting it if they are, not to me anyway. You know, I think whatever they're doing with AI, it's just a competitive necessity at this point. So, yeah, I would say they're all doing some form of AI. I think the ones who are talking about it the most are the ones who are doing functions related to automation more than the content create, more than the Gen AI stuff. I think, you know, workflow automation, data cleansing, those sort of things. One exception might be in terms of content creation. I see folks using Gen AI for creating business glossaries, for example. You know, what might otherwise be a fairly
Raise your hand, Mark.
Yeah.
We're doing that now. We're doing it right now. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, as we could all appreciate, it's a great way to kick off that sort of a project. Mm-hmm. You know, get your prompts in line and try to get that content as close to what you need as possible, but it's going to require actual subject matter expertise to review that and make sure that it is defining what it should be defining.
Certainly it gets you most of the way there, but not all the way there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's actually a perfect application for Gen AI in the governance space. I mean, it's a huge time saving right up front, but you know, you can't trust that the outcome is going to be fit for purpose without an extensive review with real experience and subject matter expertise behind that.
Yeah, cool. Hey, just real quick, revisiting back when people call and say, can you do this? Can you do that? Do you find it's more leadership or is it still the CIO or the person reporting to the CIO? Who picks up the phone and calls? Has that changed at all?
Oh, we do get some folks at C-level. I think for the most part, when people are making inquiries about training, that process of, you know, gathering the information comes mostly from a mid-level, or it comes from a training department or portion of HR. Depending on the scale of it, you know, if it's a project, if it's something that's going to be a considerable investment, then that'll take a while to talk through, to put a proposal together. It'll escalate to a C-level person when it's time to sign off and make sure that it's meeting the right requirements. But for a training course for one or two people, no, that doesn't.
That's okay. Good.
Either to come from the individual who's taking the training or it comes from the administrative function.
I'm just wondering if we had some more higher level awareness here. You're right, Tony. We could talk a really, really long time, but we have two questions that we have to ask every single guest. So we're going to go to those two questions. So the first thing is who, dead or alive, one individual who has really influenced you in the work you do?
Oh, goodness. I was hoping you were going to say, what one person do I want to have dinner with? Because I have a...
Answer it that way. Answer it that way, yeah. What is that?
Well, that would be Einstein.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I think that would be the most fascinating person to
talk
with. As much for his humanitarian perspectives as his... And maybe he could explain quantum computing to me.
Well, there you, well, you talk about out of the box. Well, that's that spooky stuff he didn't like. Yeah. So the next question, go ahead.
Well, as far as influencing my career, though, I think, you know, I had a couple of bosses very early on in my life who, like, set the ground rules for the business that I'm in now, how I go about directing the content of our conference programs. And their input has carried through to this day, in spite of whatever technology changes have come about. You know, having a judgment around what is useful to connect people to information has stood me in good stead for a long time.
That's there's always that timely advice that we get from somebody. Okay, so the last question is, we've hired Harry Potter and we have one wish. So you have one wish. And what would that wish be within the context of our conversation in the industry, obviously? What would that be?
Yeah, goodness. All right. Well, I already talked about the cost of bananas. I mean, it'd be great if those could come down. That's completely unrelated to tariffs or anything else, by the way, pricing leverage.
Absolutely, yeah. And that might be it.
I think I would have it so that people really valued professional education more.
That's good.
I think there's been something of a devaluation of that in recent years. And you know, the idea of a learning organization that was big, what, 10, 15 years ago, probably longer. And the idea that learning needs to keep happening as you progress through your professional life. I wish there was more of a macro understanding of that It certainly, there's a lot of organizations that get it, but
Yeah, that's
yeah.
good stuff.
And I say that not just because clearly it would be good for our business if people did that, but I just think the culture of learning in your adult life is not being reinforced by a lot of higher level decisions or higher level policies than, you know, way above my pay grade. But and I think that has an unfortunate effect on not just individual organizations, but culture in general, or society in general.
Tony, thank you for joining us on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Where can listeners go to learn more or to get involved with the Dataversity community?
Not too hard. Just search for Dataversity, search for data governance certification. Dataversity.net is our homepage. Or come to a conference. I mean, I think
they're fun.
With some pride, we run, I think, the best events out there. So,
and don't forget, if you listen to this, ROCK15 is your discount code for your Dataversity stuff.
15% off. Yes.
Tony, again, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Jens.
Great.
Really.
It's been great.
Always great. Good to talk to you. Thank Alrighty. You very much.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Technical conferences have existed for as long as there's been technology, but their popularity exploded in the 1990s, coinciding with the rapid growth of the tech sector. The internet existed at the time, but it was still very low speed. No Zoom conferencing or YouTube videos yet. For a tech company, their annual conference was the biggest sales and marketing event of the year. Companies would showcase their technology, make new product and feature announcements. Potential customers would be feted by their sales team. There were keynote addresses by celebrities and galas featuring big-name entertainment. Host companies tried to outdo each other every year. There was great content, great networking, it was a great time, and in some respects, sowing the seeds of their own demise. Management often considered conference attendance to be more like a paid vacation than an educational opportunity. Certainly some people treated it that way, but in my experience, not the majority. It got harder and harder to get approval to attend, and approval was sometimes denied even when the company didn't have to pay for registration or travel expenses. COVID then put the brakes on everything, and we became accustomed to interacting remotely. Virtual conferences became common, and they're much less expensive to produce and much easier to consume, plus no travel expenses. But I would also assert that they're much less effective, unless you really put yourself into the mindset of watching the presentations as though you were sitting there in the audience. The temptation to multitask is overwhelming, and chatting with a bunch of other attendees that have been assigned to a virtual breakout room is a pale substitute for chatting one-on-one with a person that you just happen to see in the hallway between sessions. John and I were talking about this after our conversation with Tony. He made the comment that maybe we shouldn't call them conferences anymore. The terms become irrevocably contaminated, but we didn't get to the point where we had an alternative recommendation. Do you have any suggestions? That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
I'd like to take a moment for full disclosure here. Our guest today, Tony Shaw, CEO of Dataversity, is also a supporter of this podcast. Now, we were talking to him for a bunch of different things, but they do offer training and they do offer a wide range of enhancements to your data career. And if you are a non-data person, that is a business person wanting to learn more, there is a whole lot of basic stuff there too, which I consider extremely important. So if you are interested in Dataversity, don't forget ROCK15, go to dataversity.net. ROCK15 gets you 15% on pretty much anything out there. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
And we're back with Tony Shaw for our famous game show, the Audio Data Rorschach Test. So, Tony, in a minute, I'm going to play for you a piece of royalty-free public domain music. And since music is evocative, I'd like for you to tell us the first thing that pops into your head that's related to data. It's important that it be related to data to keep it relevant.
Okay.
All right. So in order to maintain the illusion of randomness, I'd like you to pick a number between 1 and 4.
Do you want me to tell you what it is? Or?
Yeah. This isn't a card trick.
Okay. 3.
Okay, 3. All right, number 3. Here we go. And let's play.
Can Given my particular perspective, what I mean, your question more than the music itself reminds me of a keynote talk we had about 10 years ago from Phil Shepard, who's an English composer. He writes a lot for the movies, and he did this just amazing keynote at our event in Austin about music as data. He talked about structure, he talked about flow, quality, in the sense of if you hit a wrong note, you immediately recognize something going wrong. Mm-hmm. If I played an instrument, I might be able to give you a more sophisticated answer, but it's only 8 o'clock in the morning here. Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, Tony, thank you very much for being our guest on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. We look forward to talking to you again very soon.
All right. Thanks very much for having me.
We have so many ways to consume education today, recorded, live, virtual, but there's nothing like being together in person. Just like Roman Krantz and Gilbert Stern, the most important thing is to keep learning, however you do it. And I'm glad they'll be okay. Maybe they'll even be back someday. And no doubt, we're all going to appreciate those conference bananas much more in the future. Be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data education, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.